Kia ora and welcome to Airman's Podcast, episode 276. Today is Friday, March 30, 2012. Well, tomorrow is the last day of New Zealand's tax year, the 31st of March. The new tax year starts on April 1st, which doesn't really mean much of anything. I'm just sharing that with you. Although our clocks change on Sunday, we're going to fall back, except, of course, we don't have fall in New Zealand. We've got autumn, so autumn back doesn't quite work, does it? Anyway, the clocks go back 1 hour. Which means it'll be the biggest gap of the year between New Zealand and the U.S., and it makes it a little bit difficult to plan phone calls and things like that because it's you've either got to go to some sort of widget to check the time or you've got to do arithmetic, and everybody knows arithmetic is not my strong suit. Not in a long shot. Well, this is actually the first episode of my sixth season, which is why I call this Sixth Sense. Plus which, it's hard for me to say, so I thought people might enjoy hearing me stumble over the words. Well, you know, it happens. But it is the sixth season. Thank you for joining me for that. We shall see how this goes. Now, the main thing that we've been doing, of course, is dealing with this bloody house, and that is the ongoing drama. I can talk more freely now about what's been going on. I told you last week, that the offer we had on our house fell over. And I didn't elaborate in great detail about what happened. The people placed an offer on the house, and it was contingent on a builder's report. And, of course, these days, you usually hire a specialist company. You don't have a builder go through. You have a company that does home inspections. And they do all kinds of things. They do the same sorts of things that a builder would do, look at the construction and so on. But they also use these moisture meters to see if there's any moisture in the walls. And that's because of the Leaky Homes scandal. And I've talked about this in the past. Essentially what happened is that the previous national government changed the building regulations to allow the use of untreated timber in the framing of houses. And the reason that matters is because at the same time, the style was these houses with plaster exteriors, what we call monolithic cladding, without overhangs, a sort of a Tuscan Mediterranean-y sort of style. And in Auckland in particular, it rains rather a lot in wintertime, especially in winter. And these houses leaked. And because the timber wasn't treated, they rotted. And some people lost their life savings, or at least their homes. And the government ducked responsibility. Of course, National is back in power now, and they say, what? Who, me? We didn't do it. And so there's this massive problem. They're insisting that councils assume responsibility, which, as I said in the past, I think is bullshit because the councils were only doing what central government told them to do. And I don't think it's fair that the ratepayers and local councils should have to pick up for the mistake that the central government made. However, in the interim, since the current government took power back in 2008, and now, of course, we've had the Canterbury earthquakes, and there's basically no money to deal with these leaky houses. So people are stuck getting a few cents on the dollar compensation. And I suppose it's better than nothing. So because of that, there's been this hysteria in New Zealand, driven by the media, if we're fair. And people just assume, first of all, they look at a house that's clad in plaster and they get worried. Then they assume that if there's any moisture, that it's got to be bad. That means it's a leaky home and, oh my God, run the other direction. Well, our house is not made of timber. It's made of concrete. And I'm pretty sure I've talked about this, the construction style before. It's called Cornerstone. It's a Christchurch-based company, and their method is they have these giant polystyrene blocks. Polystyrene is what I used to call styrofoam in America. These big polystyrene blocks that lock together, and they're concrete forms. Inside them is the reinforcement bar for the concrete. They pour the concrete in them, these are for the walls, and then when they're done on the outside, they put whatever cladding is going on the outside. In our case, it's fibrous cement sheets and mesh and plaster. And on the inside, they put ordinary jib, which I called wallboard in Illinois. And that's glued onto the polystyrene. So you've got wallboard, 40 mils of polystyrene, the concrete slab walls, 40 mils of polystyrene, and then whatever your exterior cladding is. In our case, fiber cement and polystyrene. So these people put in an offer on our house, and one of the conditions was the inspection. The inspection was done, and the day before the offer was to go unconditional. And our solicitor rang to say that the offer had fallen over because their bank wouldn't lend the money because of the home inspection report they had done, which apparently found moisture in parts of the walls. Banks aren't very sophisticated. They don't know about construction. They don't care about construction. They just hear moisture, leaky home, run the other way. We won't lend on it. Now, there are others that aren't so weird, but basically that was the end. The contract was over. And so we negotiated to pay half the cost of the inspection to get a copy of the report so that we could start dealing with these, with the issues raised. Most of the issues on the report were petty, very, very trivial stuff. One of them was a doorknob was loose in the linen cupboard, which is what's basically, it's in most homes, people would call it a hot water cupboard because if you have electric hot water, that's where the hot water cylinder would sit. But we don't. We have gas, which is outside. So it's a big closet, basically. And the actually, ironically, the day that the inspector was here, that afternoon, I was putting away some clean towels, and I opened the door and go, oh, that doorknob's loose. Let me tighten it. So I tightened it right then and there. So it was all sorted before we even heard about anything. And other things like that. There was a doorstop missing somewhere, and because we just had the ensuite painted, so we hadn't put one in yet. And just a bunch of little things like that. Nothing really terribly significant. And except for he found some moisture in the walls in two places. Now, again, there is no timber in our walls, so there's nothing to rot, and it's not really a problem. It's an inconvenience, an annoyance more than anything, particularly in the garage. And there, what happens to the skirtings, which we used to call floor moldings when I was growing up, had swollen because they're made of fiberboard and turned like Weet-Bix or, soggy, cereal-y stuff. And so they needed to be replaced. And we hired a specialist moisture inspector to go over the house, especially these problem areas. And it cost us another $500, I think it was. And they're a specialist company that deals just with that. They have much more sophisticated equipment than a home inspector uses. For instance, the home inspector had a device that could only penetrate 30 mils into the wall. However, the polystyrene alone is 40 mils. So he wasn't getting accurate readings. And it's not sensitive enough to be able to differentiate between concrete, which is what all our walls are, and moisture, which is different. But he had more sophisticated equipment, and he also did infrared examination to make sure there was no problems. And the house got a clean bill of health, except for these two areas where there actually was moisture. In the case of the garage, it's because we're down at the bottom of the slope, and the driveway comes toward our house. There's a slit drain in front of the door, but it's basically only in front of the overhead door. It doesn't go across the entire front of the garage. If it had, we probably never would have gotten any water in the walls. And also, we've had an unusually wet spring and summer, and so there's been an unusual amount of rain over the past 6 months. And so that just made the problem even worse. Because about 18 months ago-ish, I put some cabinets in the garage right near one of these corners, and the cabinets are just, the ordinary flat-pack things you buy at a home center, and they're made out of fiberboard with laminate on them. If there had been any water around there, they would have disintegrated. But they haven't. They're in perfect condition. And also, when I put them there, I saw absolutely nothing wrong. There was nothing wrong with the walls at the time I put them in there. So this is relatively recent. And so the recommendation was that we extend the slit drain across the entire front of the garage. Just a little bit on either side. And that we seal all of the lights on the outside to make sure that water can't get in and travel down the cables down to the wall. And the garage, as I said, it can't cause any damage, except for the skirtings, and it can also cause mold on the jib. Mold can't grow on polystyrene or concrete because they're not organic, and so there's nothing for them to feed on. But on the other one is in the lounge, and the same thing. Water was getting in through the wires of an exterior light and traveling down the wall. There it could cause problems because the floor underneath the house is wood because we're on a slope. Normally they would build this sort of house on a concrete slab, but since we're on a slope, it has to be a normal pile house. So there, however, it wasn't severe, and the only recommendation was just that we seal the light outside so that water can't get down and travel down the cable to the floor plate. And so we had a little bit of trouble. First of all, we had a little bit of trouble getting the report, but then we finally did. Then getting a contractor to do it, we ended up hiring the contractor who built our deck last winter. And they actually came today, but unfortunately the concrete cutter, who they need to cut the driveway so they can extend the slit drain, got bogged down in something they're doing, they're not going to be available until Monday. So they just did the other minor things, replacing the swollen skirtings and sealing the lights and stuff like that. So we're most of the way there. I also have a call into the plasterer for a couple of other bits and pieces, but he hasn't returned my call yet. So we're moving along these processes. And then today I get an email that the people who put in the offer, we'd been hearing all along that they were still really interested in the house. They wanted to be kept up to date on our progress. And we've done everything on the list except for the moisture things, which we're still working on. Everything else is sorted. And then I got an email today that they've bought another house. Now, we're thinking about it, and I mean, I don't know what the story is. I don't know if they were really interested all along or if they were just stringing us along because they felt sorry for us or something. I don't know. However, what I do know is that they've moved on, and we're still stuck, unable to sell our house at this point. Well, in the sense we don't have any offers. We've been off the market for over 2 weeks now, and we are actually having an open home on Sunday. It's the last opportunity for an open home because the following weekend is Easter. Easter is a four-day holiday weekend in New Zealand, you'll recall. And they don't do open homes on Easter weekend because everybody, well, not everybody, but many people go away. Plus, which I don't think they can have open homes on Sunday because there's a trading ban. But whether they can or not, nobody does. So this is basically it. But we haven't been advertising for 2 weeks. So they just put it on the website, and they're ringing up people they know are interested to come through on Sunday. So with any luck, we might get an offer as a result of that. If not, I don't know. We originally put a set sale date on this house, which was this past Wednesday. Obviously, we've blown past that. There's nothing we can do about it. I mean, we weren't ready to be on the market at that stage because there's still so many things undone. But now, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if we're going to be able to sell. I don't know if we're going to be stuck. I don't know what's going to happen. But these people who put in the original offer, they could have said, well, let's have an extension on the period before we go unconditional until we find out what you're going to do about all of these bits and pieces. Normally, if there's a builder's report, you're given a right of remedy. However, since they weren't able to get funding from this one particular bank, they just basically canceled the contract, which suggests to me they didn't want the house in the first place, which is why these messages we've been getting that they're really keen are confusing. Because as I've said before, usually the finance clause is what I call the universal out clause. If you want to get out of purchasing a house, that's the clause you invoke. Oh, I just couldn't get finance. Because nobody has to prove that they couldn't get finance. They were turned down or whatever. So we're back to where we started this whole process. And this week I've been working on cleaning the house and getting it ready, which is why I haven't been able to podcast regularly. Actually, last week I was working on it as well. And I've been fighting a second gout attack, which started last week. And I think it started because at the beginning of the week on Monday, Nigel took the day off to get some of the things sorted, and it turns out it was actually much easier. This is not this past Monday, but last week Monday. And we went out for lunch, and I had baked beans. Now, I often call gout vegan's revenge, because gout is virtually unknown among vegetarians, almost unknown. But once somebody gets gout, they can't eat anything that vegans eat. You can't eat beans or pulses. You can't eat mushrooms. You can't eat anything with soy. Well, you can eat soy sauce, but you can't eat tofu, for instance, or soybeans or anything like that, because they're all beans and pulses. You can't eat lentils, none of that stuff. So I call it vegan's revenge. And so I had these baked beans, and then I got an attack a few days later, which is usually the way it works. So this past Saturday, we went to a theme park here in Auckland called Rainbow's End to celebrate our niece's 10th birthday. And I've never been there before, and you know, been here 16 and a half years or whatever it is, and never been to Rainbow's End. And it was a nice day. I mean, it's a bit overcast toward the end and a bit chilly, but it was still a nice day. And our niece was really glad that we were there, so that's one of the main things. And, but that also meant a lot of, you know, walking around and stuff. I didn't go on any rides. Interestingly, Rainbow's End has a two-tier pass system. You can buy a pass, an all-day pass for all the rides in the park for $49 New Zealand, which is 30-something U.S., I think. And, or you can get an $18, what do they call it? Spectator pass, so that you can just kind of wander around. It's ideal for somebody who is a caretaker for a bunch of little kids, you know, like who are too young to go on the rides, or somebody who just doesn't want to go on the rides for whatever reason. Maybe they've got a heart condition or something. Or in my case, because I just wasn't able to get around too well. And so it was ideal. And it's also a hell of a lot cheaper. Oh, sorry. Puffed into the mic. So that was what we did Saturday. And since we didn't have any open homes, we thought, well, might as well go. And this, as I said, this Sunday will be our one and only open home before Easter. And if we don't get any offers during the following 3 or 4 days before the weekend, I don't know, we'll have to reassess what we're going to do. In the meantime, we have looked at houses. I said on my my brief anniversary message 1-275 that we went to look at a house. We ended up looking at two houses that day, and we liked both of them. One of them is going to auction on Tuesday, and obviously we're not going to be ready for that. So our only hope of getting that house is if it doesn't sell at auction. And the other one is going to auction later in April, and theoretically we could be able to get that if the stars align. And so that's kind of where we're at. We're not looking too intensely at any houses because we don't know if this one's going to sell, and if this one doesn't sell, then we don't want to get our heart set on another one. But the problem is, I was talking about this with Nigel yesterday, I think it was, or the day before, that if we do sell this house, then we suddenly have to pivot to looking intently for a house we actually want to live in and not just, oh, this one's good enough. But we do have a contingency plan for that. I think I might have said this before. I forgot to listen to that episode, so I don't know. That if we end up selling and don't have a house to move into, that I'll go stay with his mom in down country for a few weeks until we do get something sorted. Because we're not going to be rushing to getting something just because it's available. It's got to be right. And we have a list of criteria that must be there regardless. And a few things that would be nice to have. And I don't know, we might even revisit that in light of all these events. But that's where we're at. We are still stalled, essentially, and have been for the past couple of weeks. This has been getting the house ready to market has been one of the most stressful periods of my life. And I said before, I did more physical labor in a short period of time than I ever have in my life before, at least many, many years. But this has also been one of the most depressing periods of my life because it seemed like no matter what we did, no matter how hard we tried to get ready, nothing was going right. I mean, yes, we got everything sorted on the list quickly, easily, and relatively inexpensively, all things considered. But the whole reason we went through this was because of a report that some inspection company did, and the people who ordered it are out of the picture completely. They've moved on. They're able to go and gallivant off into their new home. And we're still stuck here dealing with the mess that they made. And it's really depressing when you have to fix things that aren't necessary, just ordinary wear and tear items, and deal with an issue that's not really a serious issue, not a terribly serious issue anyway, and the people who caused the problem are gone. It's very frustrating. And the thing that our lives have been on hold for the past 2 or 3 weeks is really depressing. So I'm glad to see the back end of this one way or another. I did say to Nigel that I don't think I can carry on indefinitely waiting to see if we might sell and, you know, what we do next, that we're going to have to come to a point where we say, that's it, we're done. We're off the market and we're going to carry on as before, or that something, but because I just can't live like this indefinitely. So we'll see what happens. I don't have any idea how or when this is going to end. But that's where we're at. Open home on Sunday. Maybe we'll get an offer in the next few days. Maybe not. And if not, then we'll have to reassess. And that will probably be a subject of mine after Easter. I don't know that I'll get a chance to do any podcasts next week. Nigel is taking off Thursday and Tuesday, either side of Easter weekend. So he'll have a 6-day weekend. And his mom is coming up to stay with us. So obviously I'm going to be very busy with family stuff over those days. So I won't be podcasting at the end of next week, certainly. Whether I have a chance to in the first few days of next week, I don't know, because it's my work week and my big work project week. So I don't know if I'm going to have time to do an episode. So don't be surprised if I don't podcast next week. It may be the week after Easter there's Sunny making her appearance, before I have a chance to podcast. So just be aware of that. So that's what we've been doing. That's where we're at. That's basically not telling you much of anything because I don't know anything. But there are a few items in the news I wanted to tell you about. longtime listeners will remember my mentioning Darren Hughes, who was a Labour MP, rising star in the party. He was quite young when he was elected. I think he was still under 30, I believe, or maybe just over 30. I've forgotten, to be honest. And I think he was about 30, who resigned from Parliament in a scandal because a naked 18-year-old man was found wandering the streets and there were allegations of a sexual nature. We never found out what. The police did not prosecute. So that sort of ended and died, and he just kind of disappeared. Well, he's just been hired by an organization in the UK that is working on changing the voting system in the UK. They were involved in the alternative vote referendum that failed last year. I think it was last year. And they are hoping still to come up with a better system. They're also working on issues relating to Scotland and also making the House of Lords elected and those kinds of things. A lot of issues around electoral democracy. And I think he will be an excellent choice because, first of all, he's been a member of Parliament under an MMP proportional system. And I think that could be that he has an insight that maybe somebody from the UK might not necessarily have if they hadn't been through this kind of system. So that's kind of a positive development for him. Also, this within the past couple of weeks, I think it's only been about a week, the new local government minister, whose name was Nick Smith, released a report into local council governance, what they're supposed to do. And basically what they want to do is what the agenda of the radical right party called ACT wanted, which is to reduce government to nothing but, what do they say, rats, roads, and sewers or something like that. Rats, roads, and rubbish, 4 R's, and essential core government functions. And they want them to do it at the least possible cost, on the cheap, in other words. And it abandons a long history of things that local government has been involved in. Now, they're not saying close the libraries, close the parks, and all that sort of thing, but they are saying that they don't want them spending lots of money on that. And that's going to really piss off a lot of people. But in a major city like Auckland in particular, it's going to hit minorities particularly hard because the city does provide services that nobody else does. The central government certainly doesn't. There's nobody in private charities or whatever to provide some of these services. And they're going to really suffer as a result. So there's been a lot of angry reaction among not just people on the left, but people in the center as well. Well, a few days after this report was released, Nick Smith ended up resigning. All of his ministerial portfolio was in disgrace because it turned out that he had written a letter on ministerial letterhead. This is when he was minister of ACC, the Accident Compensation Commission. He'd written a letter in support of a friend of his who had a claim before ACC. And it has been alleged that it was a relationship of a sexual nature. Now, I don't know about that. I don't really care. I'm not even entirely sure that it's relevant, although I'm not sure that it isn't either, which is partly why I mention it. But he resigned in disgrace because it was extremely poor judgment to put that on ministerial letterhead, because there's no way that the agency that he's responsible for would receive that letter and not think that he was trying to put pressure on them. So he resigned. Then it turns out that the current ACC minister, whose name is Judith Collins, is embroiled in a controversy over who leaked confidential information regarding claimants and how much they received and all these other things. Information that never should have been made public was somehow sent out to the public. And it involves, again, this woman somehow. And she's got all sorts of plausible deniability. I don't know if she's involved. I don't know that she isn't involved. But I do know that she's doing a lot of backpedaling all of a sudden. Two Labour MPs, Trevor Mallard and Andrew Little, appeared on a local radio station, News Talk ZB, to talk about this. She didn't like what she heard, and so she's taking defamation action against them because this wasn't said in Parliament, so they don't have parliamentary privilege. Because anything a member of Parliament says in Parliament is privileged. They cannot be sued or prosecuted for anything they say in Parliament. But, of course, this was on the radio. Now, she claims that she's not trying to shut down debate or questions, but that's obviously exactly what she's trying to do, because I think it was yesterday in question time, she was asked repeatedly about this scandal, this growing scandal, and she kept saying, due to the fact that the privacy commissioner is investigating, it wouldn't be in the public interest to comment. What she meant was, it wouldn't be in my interest to comment. It's looking really bad for this government right now. I'm not convinced that she's not going to end up resigning as well, particularly if there is some wrongdoing on her behalf, on her part, rather. If not, it just looks really bad, and it's beginning to make this government look really corrupt, I suppose is the word. Whether they are or not, they're showing this arrogance for which national governments are usually known and what always brings them down. The last national government that was in power, Jim Bolger was the prime minister, and he was rolled by this woman named Jenny Shipley, who became our first female prime minister. Part of the reason that was able to happen is because it was the first government under MMP. It was a coalition government. It started to fall apart. Jenny Shipley cobbled it together, but it eventually collapsed anyway. The only party that has been able to hold a stable coalition together has been the Labour Party. Now, National would say, oh, they did it last term. Well, theoretically, except that the Māori Party was decimated in the last elections. The ACT Party all but disappeared. Well, it did disappear. The only ACT MP is this guy named John Banks, who used to be a National Party member of Parliament, cabinet minister as well. So it's basically gone. It is just National now. So it's unlikely that they're going to be able to hold their coalition government together to go full term, I think. I think we're going to go to the polls early. How soon that will be, I don't know. I would think that if Judith Collins is forced to resign, it will be by June. Or thereabouts, middle of the year. And if the government falls, it will probably be towards the end of the year. And it won't be because of this. It'll be because of something else that hasn't happened yet, I would think. But I don't know. We have found out that they have bungled they were supposed to open up ACC to competition. But Nick Smith, when he was in charge of it, mucked it up so badly that they have to continue providing services because they devalued ACC so much in their cutbacks and in the way they were talking it down. The finance minister, Bill English, admitted that they made up the numbers about how much money the government was going to get for selling off the state-owned assets in the election campaign. He was basically pulling the numbers out of his arse because they have no idea how much money they're going to get. And actually, it's likely to get less money now than it would have a couple of years ago, say, or 3 years ago, or 4 years ago, before the real hit of the global financial crisis. So it's one thing after another that they seem to be screwing up. And they've just appointed a ACT Party insider to be in charge of this working group looking at American-style charter schools in New Zealand, which are basically the taxpayer pays for the school and a private company runs it and collects all the profits. So it's public risk and private profit. And so that doesn't look good. The current Minister of Education is every bit as useless as the one before her, appointed her sister to a position. So there's all this cronyism that's going on, which quite frankly, the National Party is known for. And as if all that weren't bad enough for the National Party, one of their high flyers from the past, Sir Douglas Graham, has just been convicted of fraud in the collapse of a finance company. He and all the other four directors who were convicted, and another one was another former justice minister, Jeffries is his name, I can't remember his first name. They all claim that they didn't mislead investors when that's exactly what they did. The court found them guilty of misleading investors. And the fact of the matter is that Doug Graham was the star attraction in that finance company. People invested because he was there. They thought, oh, it must be safe then. It must be a good investment. They must be telling the truth. And it's because of him that they were there. So he is culpable. And now there are demands that he return his knighthood or that the prime minister strip him of his knighthood. I can't see that happening because he is a National Party guy. But I don't know. I could be wrong. Doug Graham always struck me as having some honor. And if, in fact, he does, and either he doesn't appeal or his appeal is unsuccessful, then I would hope that he would return his knighthood as the honorable thing to do. But we'll see. It's a sorry mess is what it is. But, you know, these things, they happen. So that is pretty much all the stuff in the news that I wanted to tell you about. I wanted to update you on some stuff that's going on. I did mention the Ports of Auckland dispute in the past and said I didn't really understand what was going on. And that's kind of still true, but I'm kind of on the union side now. Because if there has ever been a more mismanaged company in the history of New Zealand, it would be hard to find one that's worse than Ports of Auckland Limited. The management is just absolutely useless. And why the CEO, or whatever he's called, of Ports of Auckland is still in his job is beyond me. He is absolutely terrible. They apparently had a mandate from Auckland Council, which owns Ports of Auckland, to increase the profits. And so they decided they were going to do that by getting rid of all the union workers and casualizing them. Basically, they'd be on call when they needed them sort of thing, rather than having set shifts, which is what the dispute is actually all about. And it's not about pay. And so they went through this process of firing the union workers and hiring these people. Well, it turns out that one of the companies that they hired to find these temporary workers was set up just before the decision was made by somebody who was part of making the decision. So, you know, this insider trading kind of thing. And then it turns out that they've spent more than twice as much money so far in trying to get to so they could make more money than they were supposed to save by having done it. In other words, say they were supposed to make $50, they've spent $100. If they're supposed to save $50, they've spent $100 to save that $50. So in other words, it still costs them more than they're going to save. So it's just a total disaster, and it's not over yet. At the moment, the courts have been ruling on the side of the union, so I don't know if that's an indication of where this is headed or not, but there's increasing pressure on Auckland Council to sack the board of Ports of Auckland and put in a new board, or at the very least, the guy who's the head of it. So I don't know. We'll see. That may become a story later on as well. But those are all the things that we've been up to. Those are some of the things that have been going on in the news since I last talked about New Zealand news. And right now I am going to go on with some phone comments. And the first one is from Scotty, the little Aussie battler.
G'day, Arthur. This is Scotty, your little Aussie battler. And I just thought I would answer your question, seeing as I've just resubscribed to your podcast and listened to it. Even though it's a month old, but anyway, you haven't done a new show yet, so that doesn't matter. About Catholics and the Labour Party. Yes, there is very occasionally some talk about that, but I've never heard or read anything along the lines of it's the Catholics that are making Julia Gillard not support marriage equality. It might be true, but yeah, I haven't heard that. Not in any kind of mainstream media or even in general chit-chat. There has been the odd mention of conservative kind of right-wing Catholics, different factions in the Labour Party, but not that I'm aware of have people linked it specifically to that, so... Anyway, but yes, it does sound quite plausible. And no, I cannot understand it either. She, apparently, in looking back at some stuff that she put when she was running for a student union president at university like 30 years ago, put that marriage equality or gay rights was one of her number one issues. So I know people change, but generally they change to get a bit less conservative and a bit better when they get older. So, I don't know, that was weird. So yes, single, unmarried, living in total sin in the lodge, i.e. that's, you know, for American listeners, that's like where the Prime Minister lives, and yet hates the gays, so it's kind of weird. Okay, well, I hope there's another show from you soon, Arthur. Enjoy your work, as always. Good luck with your house issues, which possibly you're having a lot of. I don't know, just guessing. Bye.
Well, thanks for that, Scotty. And, of course, the Labour Party in Queensland just was basically wiped out in their recent state elections. But that's Scotty's territory. I'm not going to talk about that. There's a Senate inquiry in Australia that's underway right now looking into the whole subject of marriage equality. But as I've said, this isn't going to go anywhere anyway, so it doesn't matter that much, at least not yet. Probably not while this government is in power, probably not until the next time Labour's in power, whenever that may be. But now we'll go on to the second call, which is from Tom, the Ramble Redhead.
Arthur, this is Tom, a.k.a. the Ramble Redhead, the only podcaster you've met so far. Anyway, I just wanted to give a quick call to say I'm calling all my favorite podcasters and just giving them a big shout-out and just say I really, really enjoy your shows, and I really wish you all the best. So it's going to be short and sweet. I want to say thank you for what you do and what you've done for Pride 48. So thank you. Take care. Have a wonderful day, and I'll talk to you later. RambleRedhead.com. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for that, Tom. And, of course, Tom is, in fact, the only podcaster I've ever met in real life, at least so far. And, yeah. So thanks for that, Tom. Tom's a great guy. You should check out his podcast. He does many interesting interviews, including me, once upon a time. Now let's go on to the next call, which is, oddly enough, Scotty again.
G'day, Arthur. This is Scotty from just across the creek from you. Is it really true that you are now possibly not going to Pride 48? I cannot believe it. I heard it from Daniel Brewer, and everything Daniel Brewer says is correct. Ruined. Anyway, come next year. It'll be better when I'm there.
Yes, Scotty, that is potentially true. One of the reasons I haven't talked about that is because I simply don't know. Because I don't know what's going to happen with the sale of the house. I don't know if we're going to be buying a house or whatever. And so I can't predict whether or not we're going to be able to go. What Scotty's referring to is that I sent a letter to the suits at Pride 48, an email rather, giving them a heads up that it was possible that we wouldn't be able to go if, you know, because we're buying a house and there's a huge amount of expense associated with that. But because I don't know what's going to happen, I am even less sure now what's going to happen in September. So at this stage, it's safest to assume that we will not be able to attend, but I wouldn't necessarily give up hope altogether because I'm certainly not. So that's where we stand. Now, I have one final message, and it is from Roger Green.
Two drifters, off to see the world. There's such a lot of world to see. We're after that same rainbow's end, waiting round the bend, my huckleberry friend, Moon River, and me.
Well, thanks for that, Roger. Now, if that seems a bit cryptic, and well, it should, it's actually in reference to a blog post I did last weekend, which was about Rainbow's End and our trip to it. Roger was saying that he thought that, based on the title, that I was going to make some reference to Moon River, the song. And, of course, it wasn't about that at all. It was about the amusement park. But the main advantage of that particular message is that it has now extended my phone line all the way to the end of April, which is a really good thing because it was going to expire next week. So, woohoo, yay me. That is it for today. That is it for this week. I did two episodes this week. Sort of, kind of, a little bit. I don't know if I'm going to have a chance to podcast next week. It all depends on how well my work project goes. If not, I will be back the following week, the week after Easter. If I don't talk to you beforehand, you observe Easter in any particular way, I hope you have a good one. It's just a secular holiday for us, but other people may feel differently inclined. And for those who do, I hope you have a good one. I think we used to say Blessed Easter back when I was a believer. But that is it for today. That is it for this week. That is it for the moment. Who knows what the next moment holds? Have a good weekend, everybody. Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com. Or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.